Flux, which worked with the National Arab Orchestra, the First Nations community, and World Pride. Your audience, mainly wealthy and white. And you can you talk about the direction that Trump is now taking the Performing Arts Center in? We heard from what Steve Bannon, one of his allies, that he had spoken to Rick Grenell, the new head of the Kennedy Center, that they're going to be bringing what one of the first performances, the January 6th choir, to perform. Form there to usher in a new era of culture in the new Kennedy Center.
Yeah, I won't speak to the president's curatorial tastes. They speak for themselves. I think maybe what I would point to is the list of maybe more than 200 musicians who didn't want their music played at his rallies. That speaks to a broader environment, I think, and disconnect between the arts community and the political direction of the president of the United States. All the work that you cited, that's the work that we stand on and that we're proud of. You know, your listeners and your viewers know, going out to have a date night or a family night is increasingly expensive. Parking and food and, you know, not to mention the cost of the tickets themselves.
You're listening to Community Radio.
KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. Yeah!
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again, and that means brand new metal merch. Go to kboo.fm/metal to check out all KBOO's new metal merch, featuring exclusive artwork provided by local tattoo artist and musician at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March Metal Merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kboo.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to your morning talk show, More Talk Radio, here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I'm your host this morning. Today is the 31st of March, 2025, and let me begin by giving a little apology for the interruption of Democracy Now! It was a little glitz. But let me remind you that it is again on KBOO at 4 p.m. So you can hear it again, the complete show, at 4 p.m. Our apologies for the interruption or the quick termination of the Democracy Now, but that's how we beginning this, the end of the month. But thank you all for joining us, and thank you for being such devoted listeners and partners in the work that we are doing. KBOO is a community radio station, and in these times when there is so much that is going on, I think we all are aware of the challenges that we face and where we are going and what things we are leading to. Let me give you our phone number so you may call us later on in the program. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and those are the numbers in which you can give us a call and share your information and news about what's going on in your community and the concerns you have and things that people should know about. Again, I mentioned that today is the 31st of March, and I must admit I wasn't quite sure how the day would begin because, you know, so much is happening. And then I said, oh my gosh, it's the 31st of March. It's the end of March already. And then I said, well, you know, the 31st of March is a day in which we remember the labor organizer, Cesar Chavez, whose legacy made people aware of the struggles of farm workers for better pay and safer worker conditions. His success was in part because his nonviolent tactics, boycott, picket, strikes, fast, hunger strikes. Cesar and the union, UFW, sought recognitions of the importance and dignity of all farm workers and their significant. And so it is incumbent upon us to realize the struggles and legacy of the United Farm Workers and Cesar Chavez and those who worked with them, including Dolores Huertas, who with him did so much to organize farm workers. So on this, the 31st of March, KBOO and other entities in the state and in the city recognized the legacy of Cesar Chavez, and it is appropriate, I think, in this time where we are living to examine his legacy and what it is that he reminds us of who we are and what we are called to do. If Cesar Chavez was alive today, what would he have to say? What do you think he might have to say about the moment we are living in? Something to consider and something to share with your friends and family. Today, the 31st of March, is also Trans Day of Visibility, a day to show our support to the trans community in this time, especially in this era when that community is under attack in so many ways. I think it is important to bring attention to the accomplishments of trans people around the globe in our communities, the fight against cis sexism and transphobia, and spreading the knowledge of the life and legacies of the trans community. Unlike the Transgender Day of Remembrance, this is not a day of mourning. Rather, it is a day of empowerment and getting the recognition that the trans community richly deserved. So on this 31st March, we celebrate Trans Day of Visibility. It is important to acknowledge and to stand with our siblings, especially in this era in which the community is under attack by powerful forces within and outside of government. So those are some of the things that are important this day. I want us to think and consider the legacy of Cesar Chavez and what we can learn from him and the movement about how to confront the challenges we face today. He was an incredible person, and who we should admire not only, I think, for the way in which he organized his community and which he sought for the recognition and dignity of farm workers, not only in terms of resources, in terms of pay, in terms of benefits, but also in terms of the recognition of the human spirit and the need to recognize the value of workers. I think it is also important to examine people such as today, because we can learn, I think, not only, you know, what happened and how it happened, and we can tell stories of where we were, but I think it's important to recognize that that movement was based on his and the movement dedication to nonviolence, not only in terms of tactics, you know, boycotts and pickets and strikes, but also because as a philosophy, as a way of being in the world, it's a way of recognizing the dignity and the importance of all peoples, especially those we tend to ignore. And on this day, in this time when workers are being dismissed and so many communities are under attack, I think it's important to re-examine Cesar Chavez, the tactics that he used in terms of organizing communities and workers, his commitment to nonviolence, and yes, his religious faith. I wonder what people, if he was alive today, what he would have to say. Fortunately, we have people who worked with him who are still with us and who continue to make changes in the way we live. We lift up, for example, Dolores Huertas, who did so much in terms of organizing and who continue to be an empowering force in our communities. And what should we do? I think it's important as the generation who did so much in terms of organizing in the 60s and the 70s, in which so many of us learned from, that we learn their stories and their tactics and their philosophies. What do they have to say? Certainly many of us look and say, we are living in dangerous, unprecedented times. But are we really? I think, and I think many would affirm, that people have always struggled, that oppression, that authoritarianism has always been around, and that people have found ways to resist, to rise up, and to offer an alternative. I think it's all important as we think of the legacy of those who worked in particularly in the 60s and the 70s, as they die off, that we learn and listen to them. And so I'm reminded of hearing people who were so valuable. And a few months ago, we lost the Reverend Dr. James Lawson, who did so much in the civil rights and anti-war struggles, and in terms of organizing so many people. Dr. Lawson was, of course, many of us know, did much in terms of teaching people associated with SCLC in terms of nonviolence, including Dr. King. And also was the person who urged Dr. King to come down to Memphis in 1968 to to struggle along with sanitation workers, the garbage workers. And I think it's important, as we remember on this day, Cesar Chavez and his work in terms of organizing people, that Martin Luther King, his life was certainly about civil rights, but also about, it's important to remember that he lost his life when he went and supported workers, sanitation workers in Memphis. It was something that they recognized, that the struggle for civil rights is also connected to the struggle for economic rights and for people such as Cesar Chavez and MLK and Dolores Huertas and James Lawson and on and on and on. Those things are so important, and we have so much to learn. So a question I ask for you, and would like on some inquiry, some thoughts, are there lessons that we can learn from those who were so influential in the 1960s and 70s? And is there any relevance to the struggles, to the problems we face today? And on this day, the Transgender Day of Visibility, how may we support our trans siblings? Our numbers again are 503-231-8187. I'm Cecil Prescott, and let's hear what our caller has to say. Good morning, Santiago. How are you this morning?
Doing well, Cecil. How about yourself?
I'm okay. What are some of your thoughts today?
Well, you know, I think it's really important to remember that Cesar Chavez, and the name of the woman you're thinking of is Dolores Huerta, not Huerta.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, anyway, what I was saying is that, the legacy of Cesar Chavez is complicated because, you know, he was a part of the larger movimiento, which is what people commonly refer to as the Chicano civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. He was very radical in terms of immigration on the one hand earlier on, but the one thing that kind of makes his legacy complicated is that he was that's a huge problem.
Wait, hold on. Santiago, we miss about 15 seconds. You were moving around, and just when you said one,
it's a little windy out here.
Oh, okay. But it was an important point. Yeah. Why his legacy is complicated? Say that again.
Well, his legacy is complicated because, like, on the one hand, he was such a huge part of what is known as El Movimiento, which is like the Chicano civil rights movement, that, you know, sprang up along the same lines as the Black civil rights movement, but also, at the end of the day, he was an assimilationist, and as we found out, I mean, while his tactics of nonviolence, you know, worked in his specific situation at the time, as we learned later, you know, it's assimilation doesn't help anybody but the oppressor, and I think him being able to secure a lot of rights for the farm workers, specifically immigrant farm workers, or, Chicano specifically, you know, he talked a lot about how, like, you know, it was, you know, the illegals coming up and getting jobs were taking rights away from workers within the union, which put him at odds a lot of times with the larger movement, because, you know, we all implicitly understand that, you know, especially from a leftist perspective, that there's no meaningful difference other than paperwork between what people would call like a Mexican national or a Mexican American.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we have seen, our government has never once truly made a cultural distinction.
Yes.
And especially right now, as I'm finding out, you know, talking to a lot of indigenous communities, you know, they don't really care for a difference between who is a card holding tribal member and somebody who just looks illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, his legacy is complicated. I mean, right. I think a lot of us should be grateful for what he has done for specifically Chicano people, because the UFW, United Farm Workers, while it did focus on farm workers in general, and to this day, a lot of farm workers are still Latino, Chicano, Mexicano. You know, they fall within that category, and that's what made the UFW so radical for its time, is that, you know, the farm owners at the end of the day thought that we were barely entitled to air, let alone beans and goat cheese.
Right, right.
So
I wonder if you could go back and say a little bit more in terms of when you say assimilationist, because I think, if I understand you in part, that a lot of explain what you mean by that and how that differs from other people.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so assimilationism is essentially where we give up, we as Chicanos or Mexicanos or Latinos, we give up our identity with our cultural group in order to be a part of what, you know, the greater story of America.
Mm-hmm.
Where essentially we Americanize ourselves. And they have a word for us south of the border. They call us pocho, which means rotten fruit.
Oh.
Because a lot of us, whether we had made that choice for ourselves or not, have been separated from the greater Chicano community. Now, a lot of other figures within the Chicano movement, folks like Corky Gonzalez, who is considered like the Malcolm X of Chicanos, and then you have even further left folks like Rafael Cuarón and other folks like Ricardo Flores Magón. You know, mm-hmm. they understood that culture was a huge part of why we were treated the way we were treated, and that it was also what gave our people strength.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the greater part of the Chicano movement was not assimilationist.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, in fact, we had our own, the Brown Berets were based off the Black Panthers, and we had basically the same point plan, you know,
right.
El Plan de Asman, it was basically the same outline, but for Chicanos, mm-hmm. for the 10-point plan of the Black Panthers.
Yes.
But it's just important but that's why it's so important to put him in context, you know, and as far as like, you know, what Cesar Chavez would say today, like, it's hard to tell, honestly, because we've seen radical figures like Angela Davis, who have essentially been, and even Dolores Huerta herself, you know, as much as I appreciate what she's done as well, a lot of them have been roped into this system where we believe we're Americans.
Yeah.
And we're not. We've never been Americans. We make a difference between, like, paper citizenship and cultural citizenship. And regardless of whether our papers are up to date, if the culture doesn't accept us, then we're not truly American. I mean, it's like, and America takes, I mean, what American imperialism does is it takes all the best things of what make a people, and then pare it down into like the most, it takes all the culture out of it and just leaves you with like a hamburger and French fries.
Right. Yeah.
Sort of like boringness. And that's what makes, you know, that's what American imperialism does, and that's what it does to a lot of Chicanos and Latinos and Mexicanos. You know, we're forced to give up our lives and our culture for a country that has taken from us and given us scraps, and then when we speak up about it, we're ungrateful.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think it's in terms of like his nonviolent tactics are great, But the thing is like tactics only work within a certain framework.
Well, this is
and
a,
other
this,
forms of.
Well, this is this ahead. This is part of a larger argument. I appreciate larger discussion in terms of nonviolence,
yeah.
Because I think in part it one must make a differentiation between nonviolent tactics, which you use or not use depending on the situation, and what I believe from my reading is sort of like a deep, for lack of a better term, faith in nonviolence that characterized. So that was different. I think to understand him and his movement, and similar to people like MLK, you can talk between, you know, nonviolence tactics and nonviolence as a philosophy, and those are two somewhat different arguments, but I think are important that one should argue, should discuss. And I think I don't think one should bring them together because they're not necessarily the same.
I agree with you to an extent, but what I'll say is that that the American propaganda system has lionized those they have nonviolent.
Oh, definitely.
You know, people talk about. Go ahead.
I was going to say definitely. If they sort of like defamed, the radicalness of nonviolent philosophy, and that happens all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, but, I mean, it's deeper than, I mean, the defanging is part of it, but the other part of it is essentially saying that, you know, Cesar Chavez and MLK were these great Americans who were contributing to, you know, what they felt was like the American dream. And you could argue that to a point, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, they understood that they were fundamentally not citizens.
Right,
and
right.
that they were fighting for, you know, that they were struggling for the right, you know, for the rights of their people, but as people like Malcolm X and Corky Gonzalez truly explained, it's not about civil rights because civil rights were for civilians, for citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the larger project of human rights. And when you look at it fundamentally, all revolutionaries are nonviolent because while a lot of them did turn to violence in the end, they started with nonviolent pleas for the government to do something for their people. And when the government refused them or turned them down or beat them down at every turn, at some point, like Stokely Carmichael says, he's like, you know, he said that a nonviolence only works if your opponent has a conscience and America has none. And even Martin Luther King himself regretted, you know, trying to assimilate black folks because he's like, I think I assimilated my people into a burning building.
Right, right. Hey.
So, and I mean, yeah.
No,
I just think it's hard to say what Cesar would say now just because the propaganda machine is so good at buying off former revolutionaries in order to
create
this democracy that doesn't exist.
Which is why I think it's so important for you and others to set the story straight, because you are quite correct. There is an effort to, for lack of a better term, defang, to make homogenize so many of those who were revolutionaries in their thinking and in their actions, and it is incumbent upon all of us to honor their legacy, and not only repeat these myths that we hear, but to build on that challenges and thoughts for how we meet the fire we face today.
Yeah. Absolutely, I agree. And just one more thing and I'll go. Trans visibility, I think it's important to remember that the first trans folks to really break the barrier literally were black and brown trans folks at Stonewall, and that, you know, as we're coming up on, you know, Pride Day in June, to remember that Pride Day was a riot. They threw bricks at cops because they were tired of being harassed by them, and, you know, they've done a lot to defang queer and trans folks' revolutionariness too.
Right, so important. So important. Thank you so much for calling, and thank you for your thoughts, and thank you for your commitment to justice. You are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and our numbers are 503-231-8187. Today is the 31st day of March, not only the last day of the month of March, in like a lion, out with a lamb. I think that's how it goes. Yes, yes. Ray, the birthday man, said, yes, it is. So there's so much that's going on, but I think it's also important to think of not only as a last caller, some reflection on Cesar Chavez and what his legacy mean today. I think it's important to remind ourselves that these were living, breathing individuals with wisdom and faults. And I think it's important to look at people's life as they lived and learn what we can learn from them and build upon what they have placed before us. So what can we learn from the legacy of Cesar Chavez on this day in which we remember him? Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and also today is Trans Day of Visibility, and it is important for us to acknowledge and to recognize those communities which are under attack. And to bring it all together, our last caller, Santiago, reminded us that when we're talking about queer liberation in the United States, especially when we talk about the modern movements in the last 60 years or so, particularly the Stonewall riot that is seen as an important moment in queer liberation in 1969, that those who began the rebellion were black and brown trans people who said, no, we're not going to take it anymore. And they threw a brick. So on this Trans Day of Visibility, let us not erase the legacy of the trans communities and find out ways in which we can build up and support the community which is under attack. Those are some thoughts that we had for today. So if you have thoughts on Trans Day of Visibility or Cesar Chavez and the legacy, what can we learn from him and the movement? And as one caller, the first caller reminded, shared so much information about the legacy and how all our legacy are mixed. It isn't one or the other. But because we are human, there's so much we can learn. And this week is only the beginning of activities as we begin the month of April. And as many of you are aware of, on April 5th this weekend is a National Day of Action. There are rallies and communities all around the nations, all around, and certainly all around Oregon and Washington in communities. Check those out and check where you might participate, including a big rally at noon and March at the Japanese American Historical Plaza on Northwest NATO Parkway in Portland. It's a part of a national campaign apparently of resistance. Now, what do you feel about that, and what do you feel about this action tell our government hands off immigrants, you know, free speech, and or hands off our bodies, our health care, and our rights. So, Indivisible, I think it's done a lot in terms of organizing that. What are your thoughts about that? Are you active in, will you participate in the National Day of Action and building upon what we talked about earlier in terms of the legacy of people such as Cesar Chavez and Trans Day of Visibility? What are ways in which we can not only make noise, but challenge the direction that those in charge of our government is taking us? And it is something that is dangerous that I think we all recognize and that we all are working on. And times like we haven't seen before, but that's always the case. Each generation is called to work out and do the work of their generation. So what are your feelings about what we are called to do, and particular on this day, on the Trans Day of Visibility, and on which we recognize Cesar Chavez, what are things that we can learn from movements of liberation, as our caller mentioned, in terms of the uprising at Stonewall in 1969, again, was the movement of people, marginalized people, trans, brown and black, many of them sex workers, who say that we had enough and we have to make a stand. Similarly, on this day in which we recognize and remember Cesar Chavez, and the movement of people that he was a part of, ordinary people were saying that we have a right to fairness, we have a right to good working conditions, we have a right to be treated as people, and we have a right to have not only decent wages, but benefits and health and support for our families. Those movements, which were so crucial, continue to have impact today. And as we stand up in this era of, I don't know what we will call this era, a future generation, but as we resist and as we struggle against the massive overreach of those in power and those in control, I think it's important to hear the words and to reflect on the legacy of people such as Cesar Chavez, and to remember the work of people such as Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, who did so much in terms of the early queer movement activism. Give us a call and let us know your thoughts. 503-231-8187. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I'm anxious to hear what you have to say and be a part of this conversation. Cesar Chavez, the Trans Day of Visibility, where do we go from here? Let's hear from our next caller. Paul, good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Cecil.
How are you today?
Pretty good. Nice, cool, rainy day. I guess we need these.
Okay, yes.
So maybe we'll break the drought. Trans Day of Visibility, you know, I just want to give a shout out that yesterday about 150 people from North Portland, trans and their supporters showed up at this St. John's Plaza for a rally for an hour and a half yesterday in the rain.
Excellent.
And there's little groups of people coming together all over the place, but you know, it's not getting in the media. So,
no. Were you able to participate at that event yesterday?
Yes.
And you said there were about 150 people? That's amazing.
Yeah, wow. Right. It's just from North Portland, but I mean, you know, I don't think it made any of the news or anything, but there, you know, there's a plaza down there, and there's
right.
buses go by, and visibility, and people were upbeat, and young people, old people, grandparents, and parents, and aunts, and uncles, and
houses
of trans people.
Right, and I think that's the important part, people gathering in their community and saying, here we are, this is what we believe, this is who we are, and, you know, there may not have been, you know, visibility from the media, but, you know, the people who were impacted, the people who passed by on the bus, the people who saw you in the park, you had an impact. And as people gather in their communities, that's where change begin and things happen. So thanks so much, Paul, and thank you all for...
Yeah, people just have to, you know, stand up and support our friends and family and don't be afraid.
Exactly. I like how you put that. Stand up, support our friends and families, and don't be afraid. That's so important. Thank you. Okay. I think Paul hung up, but stand up for our friends and our family, and don't be afraid. Paul reminded of a rally that was at a plaza in a neighborhood in Portland, St. John's, yesterday, where he said maybe 150 people gather in the community to let people know of their support of the trans community, and that we are here and we will not allow our voices to be silenced. That is so important. And people are doing things in their communities in many different ways. As an earlier caller reminded us of the legacy of Cesar Chavez, and what can we do today? And certainly people can take and learn from persons in histories and incidents in history and build upon those things. And make action right now. As our last caller, Paul, said, community of people gathered and saying, we need to do something, and this is who we are, and this is where we stand. And we see that in communities all over, how people are gathering and making a difference, mutual support, making sure that their neighbors and their families and their friends are protected, that they are cared for. Because ultimately, we know that we are, at the end, have only ourselves. We have only ourselves to be for us. And so we must learn to look out for our neighbors and our friends and our communities. And as Paul so reminded us in that action in St. John's yesterday, how people just gather and made a difference. So what are your thoughts on this day, the last day of March, Cesar Chavez, Trans Day of Visibility? What are people doing, things that are making a difference? Let's hear from our next caller. Josh has some words to share. Good morning, Josh.
Hi there.
Yes, you're on the air, Josh.
Hey, I wanted to let folks know about a phone banking for a couple of special elections in Florida, Florida District 1. Even though I'm in Portland and I've mm-hmm. hardly ever spent any time in Florida, Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Actually talked about how there's Bernie Sanders and AOC have been heavily on their oligarchy tour, have been hitting up traditionally red districts.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's just been a ton of turnout and support. So if anybody wants to help with...
How can someone in Oregon help?
I'm sorry, say that again?
No, say that again. How may people help?
Oh, by phone banking.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that nobody hearing me right now is anywhere near Florida, and that's okay. I'm not either. They're still happy to have volunteers to do phone banking from anywhere in the country to call up Florida voters in those districts to get out the vote for Democrats in those districts.
And go ahead.
The special election is tomorrow, April 1st is the polling day. They don't have vote by mail there, so mm-hmm. everybody has to go to the polls in person.
and so what people can do is in terms of be a part of the phone bank to get the voters out. Is that something that you're doing? And
yeah, I haven't started yet, but I just I just got the phone number and I called and left a voicemail and also sent a text message to it. And about an hour later, just half an hour ago, during the first part of your show, actually, a volunteer manager from the campaign called me back and sent me the information that I need to get started making calls.
Hey, thank you so much, and reminding us that no matter who you are, we can make a difference, and especially in these this special election tomorrow in Florida, where the in the House the Republicans have a very narrow margin, and so these elections make a difference. And as you suggested, reminded us, regardless of where you are, you can participate. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, of course, Wisconsin's Supreme Court race that Elon Musk is pouring money into.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's important if folks don't know, because it doesn't just affect the state of Wisconsin. It affects, it will tip the balance on the state Supreme Court, which can then determine the districting and gerrymandering mm-hmm. for the state, which then affects the national elections for Congress.
Right. Well, you know, I think for someone like us who say, why is the richest man in the world spending so much money on a state judicial race? I think you help explain why he's doing it and why it should be a concern for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, and you know, I also want to say, by the way, that earlier this year, after Trump's inauguration, Google removed the clause from their website, which I think hasn't been true in at least a decade, but it was still up there, but now they've removed it, that said that they were committed to not using their technology for military or surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
Or policing, you know, purposes.
Yes.
And they've now removed that section from their website.
Yeah.
You know, I just would really encourage people to also just become very digitally savvy about hygiene. Keep your phone, not just in airplane mode, but actually physically powered off, and remove the battery if you can. Anytime you're not using it. I mean, those things are chock full of all kinds of sensors, and I think most people just are really not aware of all the ways. It's not just about, like, if you're talking, you know, people think like, oh, well, if I'm talking about something important, you know, then I'll turn my phone off. But I would actually say get in the habit of keeping it off at all times.
Right.
Because there's so much data that they collect on us that they use to manipulate our sometime last year there was something I read about personalized pricing, how all these different apps will basically charge each individual a different price for the exact same product depending on that person's finances and what they think they're the most money that they think that person is likely to pay.
Sure.
And I would say that's even just the most innocuous of usage. There's emotional recognition.
Okay, well, let me ask you another question, because you began a conversation by talking about how people can call in and participate in terms of phone banking.
Which I realize flies in the face of the last thing I said.
What I'm asking, someone called in and they said, well, how can I do it? So can you give us a number? Where did they call? How did they do it?
Yeah, just a second here.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I had two different numbers that they texted me from. So
a number that people can call if they're interested in doing a phone bank.
Right. Yeah, and I apologize. I'm trying to pull that up right now. Contacts.
And I won't make a joke and say that I hope your phone wasn't off and your battery was out and you had to put the battery back in the phone to find it.
No. Okay, here we go. It's area code 850-396-2799. So 850-396-2799.
Okay. All right. Hey. Okay.
And if you, I would suggest both calling and leaving a voicemail with your callback number saying you want a phone bank, as well as in addition sending a text message. I would advise doing both of those things.
Okay.
I think it's mainly a message only phone number.
Sure.
You know, it's their campaign headquarters, so you know, you probably will hear back, you know, sometime later this morning.
Excellent.
Hey,
thank you so much, and thank you for those suggestions of what people can do, and thank you for being you and doing what you're doing. We appreciate it. And let's go to our next caller, Tangent. Good morning, Tangent.
Hi, Cecil. How are you, brother?
I'm well.
All right, me too. Getting better all the time. Okay. Positive. I wanted to share some really good news. We watched a French channel, and I don't know if people are aware of Marie Le Pen is a far-right woman. She's been under investigation, and they just found they prevent her from running for the next 5 years.
Yes.
But also, she's going to prison for 4 years.
I didn't hear about the prison. I heard about not being elected.
They actually do things
okay.
over there. And she was not only just for her hate speech and such, but because she embezzled a bunch, I think it was $400 some odd million, or hundreds, I don't know, but she embezzled, her party embezzled money from the European Union in order to finance their activities. Okay, so for fun things, one thing here, I've been thinking about this, Donald Duck Trump. Quack, 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 quack.
So what about the president?
Well, he walks like a Donald. He talks like a Donald. He must be a duck. Duck the draft. Duck the IRS. Duck 34 felonies, insurrection. Okay. But along with that, I want to say I would like to call him now the President Czar.
Well, certainly he seems to believe that, and I heard something of statement he made that he wasn't joking about a possible third term, but, you know,
yeah.
we'll see what's possible. Hey, thank you so much, Danger. We appreciate your call. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Our callers have shared a number of their thoughts about where we are in the world. Our last caller, some reflection on, you know, what's going on with France and Marie Le Pen, and will not be able to run for president of France, and shared some information about that. We've also had some conversation about where we are going as a nation, as a group, before Tangent called, Josh called and shared some information, including about how wherever you are able to make a difference. He talked about the national elections, and there's a couple elections in for U.S. House of Representatives in the state of Florida, how people, even if you are not a resident of Florida, can make a difference by participating in phone banking, by calling voters who are in that district and urging them to vote. That's something you can do. An earlier caller, Paul, talked about how in his neighborhood in Portland, how people gathered at a plaza celebrating Trans Day of Visibility yesterday. And while it may not have gotten news coverage, it made a difference for those 150 people gathered and people who passed by that plaza and saw them. What you say and what you do makes a difference. And I think as our callers have reminded us this morning that everything we say and everything we can do has an impact, not only on our most immediate community, but throughout the world. And as Josh reminded us, by participating in a phone bank and by urging people in another district, in another state to vote, you are part of something that is making a difference that is positive. Certainly, there is so much that keeps us down, but I think it's important to remind ourselves that we can make a difference and that we are able to make a difference. So on this day in which there's so much going on, I want you to remind yourself of who we are and what we can do to make a difference. Remember the motto from the UFW, si se puede, it can make a difference. It can be done. And that is who we are and what we are doing. So on this day, Trans Day of Visibility, on this day in which we recognize the legacy of Cesar Chavez, let us remember that communities throughout the world are making a difference. And as Cesar Chavez said once, there's no turning back. We will win. We are winning because ours is a revolution of mind and heart. Cesar Chavez, let's not turn back. We will win. I'm Cecil Prescott, and you have been listening this morning to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Thank you all who are supporters of this radio station and those of us who are making a difference. Hold on, keep the faith, and as Cesar Chavez reminded us, there's no turning back. We will win.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through